Brian, thanks for doing this. We hope to make you laugh organically so we can hear your laugh.
Well, let's see. Let's see how funny you guys are.
Not very.
Pressure's on. Yeah.
All right. Let's start with the big trade. Everybody wants out of Miami, naturally. Makes sense. First-round pick, part of the package for Minka Fitzpatrick after losing your starting quarterback. That is a big roll of the dice. What did you think of it?
They need help to the side, especially in the secondary. You look at what they've been doing, what they've not been doing in two ball games. I think they're allowing around 30-plus points per ball game to opposing offenses, around 400 yards total. So clearly, defensively, they have really dropped the ball on that end. And being able to get a guy like Patrick, a guy that was a top 15 selection what, two drafts ago, is huge because he instantly improves the secondary. I think he has an opportunity to be a potential Pro Bowler in the near future. And you still get him extremely young in his career.
Yeah, I love that trade. I just can't imagine the Steelers ending up with a draft pick where they go into 2020 and they're sitting there at the draft, and if Minka Fitzpatrick was available with that pick and they would say, no, we're going to pass and we're going to roll the dice on somebody else. Like, you know, you're getting a stud defensive back and you're paying a pretty reasonable price for a guy who you still have a lot of team control, right? Like, this is not a player who's long in the tooth. I still think that, consider this year included, they get the next 4 years of Minka Fitzpatrick's career. I think it's a great trade for the Steelers now and in the future. The follow-up, though, is that Jalen Ramsey also wants out of Jacksonville. And if you had your druthers, if you had to pick one of those two guys, who would you want to have?
Clearly, you'd rather Jalen Ramsey. He's the better player. You know, he's an all-pro player. But the issue with Jalen is that eventually you're going to have to pay him. And most teams won't have the cap space available to give him the money he's looking to get as being the highest paid corner in the game. So Nick Fitzpatrick is more reasonable. He's still under his rookie deal. Roughly, what, 3 more years? And then you talk about, you know, an extra year if you needed to do so. So you got him locked up, you know, long term, to say the least, compared to getting a guy like Jalen, who you potentially could be renting for a year, not knowing if you can actually pay him the money he's looking to receive.
So does this make a statement about the franchise's belief in Mason Rudolph, do you believe?
No question. I like Mason Rudolph. I love Mason Rudolph coming out of Oklahoma State. He really has grown over the last 2 years, especially this offseason. Preseason, he had a real good camp. He continued to get better. And we actually saw a glimpse of what he can do when he jumped in the lineup when Big Ben went out with that injury. Played real good football. I mean, they did not lose that ball game because of Mason Rudolph, in my opinion.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. I like Mason Rudolph. You know, you invested a third-round pick in him a couple of years ago. I don't think that, you know, you want to punt on a season this early just because you lose Ben Roethlisberger, especially considering, yeah, I watched a lot of that game as, you know, a Seahawks fan, and we did win that game against your Steelers. Russell Wilson was brilliant. But, yeah, man, I looked at Mason Rudolph. I thought, yeah, he's playing as good, if not better, than Ben Roethlisberger did in that game. He was really, really dangerous at times. So, yeah, like, take a roll of the dice, add to a position of need, and add a guy who has a bunch of player control. I think it's actually a great trade for the Steelers. That said, is part of this that the AFC is just so weak at the bottom? Like, when through 2 weeks looking at the Browns, they don't look too terrific. I would probably argue that the fourth best team in the AFC so far has maybe been, like, the Bills. Like, I don't know. It looks really, really wide open in the AFC this year. Do you get the same sense as well, or has there been someone other than those top three, Patriots, Ravens, and
Chiefs,
that have impressed you?
You know what? I agree with you. It's top heavy, but I actually like it with a lot of uncertainty outside of the top three teams, and here's why. You really can't dictate the narrative. I think right now you said you can make an argument for the Buffalo Bills potentially being the fourth best team. You know, I could make an argument for that the Indianapolis Colts could be the fourth best team. Or you can even say the Cleveland Browns. So not really knowing exactly what can happen outside of the top three teams, make it more entertaining to watch when it comes to AFC matchups, because it's so wide open.
If you're a Browns fan, do you feel better or worse after that victory yesterday?
I mean, you never feel bad after getting a win, especially when you didn't have one on your record. So you got to love winning a ball game regardless who it was against. Now you're going in the right direction. You're 1-1. You saw some pretty good things from your offense compared to what you didn't see week one, and the same could be said with the defense. Still, penalties is an issue. This team seems a bit to be a bit undisciplined, but winning is always a plus. Always will put a smile on your face.
Yeah. Do you trust that Baker Mayfield is who we anticipated he was coming into this season?
Not yet. I felt like a year ago Baker received more than enough hype. Not saying that he wasn't deserving of the hype, but we were ready to anoint him into that conversation right outside of elite type play at the quarterback position. And even talking fantasy with the fantasy, many people felt like Baker would be one of the best fantasy quarterbacks in the league because of what he did when he jumped into the starting lineup last year. So I think he's pressing. That sophomore slump is something that you always have to consider, especially at the quarterback position, and he's pressing. And I'm not really a fan of their play calls right now. Me personally, I mean, you got so many superstars in that offense. You have to find a way to establish an identity. And right now, their offense, they don't have an identity. If you have a guy like Nick Chubb in the backfield, I mean, we saw what he did last year when given the opportunities. That is who you funnel the offense through. And then that can take pressure off of Baker's plate and provide opportunities in the passing game. So far, they haven't been able to do that. And I think that plays a big part in the struggles that we're seeing from Baker.
How long do you think that's going to take, though? Because I would say that you get some reprieve when you're trying to work in a guy like Odell Beckham Jr. You want to make sure that he gets his targets, that he gets his touches. You don't want to ignore Jarvis Landry. You don't want to ignore Njoku. Like, you've got a lot of the guys on that offense that, you know, want to touch the football. And if you're a run-first team and you're just saying, you know, we're going to be funneling this thing through Nick Chubb, don't you run the risk of kind of aggravating guys early in the season? Like, when should we know what the Browns actually are offensively?
We should know by the end of September. We should have an idea of what they are. And if you have guys that are complaining about opportunities and they're winning, then they're not concerned about team achievements. They're more concerned about individual achievements. There are so many teams in throughout the NFL that have quality playmakers on the offensive side. But I don't hear any rumors coming from their locker room that this guy is unhappy, especially when they're winning. Let's use the Kansas City Chiefs as an example. Right, go back to last year. Kareem Hunt, before he was suspended, Tyreek Hill, Sammy Watkins, Travis Kelce, even Conley. I mean, they had so many big-time playmakers, and they were winning ball games. So everyone, you have to understand, tonight might not be your night. It might be Jarvis's night. Or today it might be Odell's night. It might be Nick's night. They have to understand that based on what defenses are doing to them, it's up to their quarterback to take the matchup that's in his favor. So if you have individuals that are complaining, if they're not getting opportunities and they're still winning, they're not team-first guys.
Yeah, I'm just more, I guess, concerned about their ability to win. Because that was not a convincing effort against the Jets to me. Like, the Jets hung around for too long in that football game, considering they had a third-string quarterback in there and a defense that was missing their captain and C.J. Mosley, along with some pieces around on the defensive line. And, yeah, now you've got a schedule that includes five upcoming games that have the Patriots, the Seahawks, the Rams, the Niners, and the Ravens. Like, this is going to be a real tough test for a Cleveland team that, like you said, is still searching for an identity. Eli Manning, it's tough to not say that his career is over today, right? Like, why would another team want to go out and get Eli and pay him $10 million based on what he's shown? Like, do you think he gets another shot? And if he's done, is that a Hall of Fame career to you?
Let me answer your last question first.
Sure.
Yes, he's a Hall of Famer. Mm-hmm. Two-time Super Bowl winning quarterback, played in New York. His last 3-4 years have not been Hall of Fame-like, but I think the beginning and the middle of his career will get him into Canton. Playing in that market does wonders for him, so yes, he's a Hall of Famer. Will he get another opportunity if the Giants decide to trade him? And I think he will ask to be removed. I think so. I think knowing that Daniel Jones is going to be the future, if you're Eli Manning, if you have any aspirations of trying to play in the National Football League this year, you ask to be traded. Now, teams that are available that potentially may need quarterback help. I mean, what about the Jets? I mean, we have Sam Darnold has mono. I don't know exactly the status of that injury, but you know they need quarterback help sooner than later. The Miami Dolphins, Jacksonville with the Tom Coughlin connection there, even though Nick Foles is scheduled to return at some point in time this season, maybe Jacksonville could be a destination. So I think there are a few teams that could use an experienced quarterback. And let's keep it real, too. It's not like he was working with a full deck of cards in New York. I mean, top receivers are not playing. Sherford didn't play this past weekend. We've yet to see Golden Tate because he's been suspended. They're still trying to establish an identity on the offensive line. Defensively, they can't stop anybody. So it wasn't like he had a pretty talented team surrounding him, and I think that played a lot to the struggles he was showing.
I think your dog is an Eli fan, and he got upset when you mentioned the Dolphins. He's like, no, please no. Okay, we got the laugh. There's the laugh. It's a pretty good laugh.
You know what? I think when you mention the Dolphins to anybody, it upsets you.
Yeah. Especially your dog.
I think Eli would probably rather just stay on the sidelines in New York than go play for the Dolphins. Like, honestly, I just can't see how he'd be like, you know, that sounds great. I want to go there. I want to get pounded by every team in the NFL week in, week out.
I mean, you know what? It tells you how bad that team is in Miami, because how many individuals you know in their 20s, mid-20s, or late 20s, early 30s would like to leave South Beach?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great point. It's just so hard for me to envision how they're going to win or make this thing work when, you can't retain your young talent because nobody wants to be there.
Yeah. I mean, they're tanking. It's obvious. They're kind of becoming the Philadelphia 76ers of the NFL. Tanking on purpose, stockpiling on picks, looking towards the future, not concerned about 2019. And they're accepting that fact.
Yeah, I just think it's like if the Philadelphia 76ers were tanking, but then the guys they drafted, like, they would go, okay, well, we've selected Joel Embiid, and then Embiid in year one is like, yeah, trade me, because I don't want to be here. This sucks. I want to go play for a different team. Like, it's all well and good to stockpile those picks, but you got to be able to keep your first-round assets, and, like, they're not even able to do that. And they spent a second-round pick to bring in Josh Rosen, and somehow he's still on the bench. Like, why haven't we heard that he's starting yet? Because, man, you give up a second and a fifth to go out and get Josh Rosen, and a lot of people like that trade. And I think it's 102-10 is their scoring aggregate through 2 weeks. I just can't imagine how he would be worse than what Ryan Fitzpatrick has done at this point.
Exactly. I'm waiting for them to make that announcement that Josh Rosen is a starting quarterback. He can't be worse than Ryan Fitzpatrick. And if he is, he's not deserving of being on that roster. If you're telling me Josh Rosen cannot play up to the level that Ryan Fitzpatrick has played in two ball games, and you just stated they've only scored 10 points, he's not deserving of being on that roster. You invested a second rounder. What are you waiting for? Right now, me personally, I'll throw Josh Rosen into the fire. Let's see, can he provide a spark? Because basically, Josh Rosen is playing for next season. Because let's say, hypothetically speaking, guys, Josh Rosen goes out and ball out from the individual standpoint. Now you might not be forced to use the first overall selection on the quarterback. You know, you might have the opportunity to trade out of the first overall selection to stockpile on more picks. Or if you put Josh Rosen in the lineup and say, you know what, he don't have it. Now we're destined to get Tua from Alabama, first overall selection. So their logic is not making any sense to me, and clearly it's not making any sense to them.
The saddest part, like for me personally, is that one of my college roommates is a Dolphins fan, and he's just totally Stockholm syndrome. Like, no, this is the way to go. It's fine. Everything's fine. I don't mind. And I'm like, oh my God, this is terrible for you. He's so broken by his just decades of being a Dolphins fan that now even seeing this kind of stuff is acceptable behavior to him. So the referees in week two were, I think, a really big story. Dalvin Cook gets some phantom offensive pass interference penalty that really changed the complexion of that Vikings game. Like, if you go back and add those 4 points and then, you know, the fifth point being when Stephon Diggs is frustrated because they overturned that first touchdown, like that's a tie ball game now. Like, the Vikings are absolutely in that game. The Saints defense gets a turnover based on a play that they call dead way too early. That would have been a defensive touchdown for Cam Jordan. Again, completely changes the complexion of the game. Roughing the passer in the Bears game, where Bradley Chubb just completely clean hit. One of the just like not even a modicum of how could you call this roughing the passer, changes the game and gives the Bears a win on the road. Are we heading to a situation where we actually get more reviews in the NFL?
I won't say that, but we are headed into a situation where the referees are dropping the ball more so than what they've done in years past, especially when you look at the NFC Championship game on one of the bigger missed calls in NFL history, right? So now, let's attack the Saints game. sack, forced fumble. It's basically an unwritten rule in the NFL. You do not blow a play dead if you're unsure if it was legit. You always have an opportunity to do what? Go back and allow the replay booth to determine if that was a legit play or not. They blew the play dead. And I'm not saying the Saints lost that ball game because of that missed call, because that did take off 7 points. And remember, that drive, offensively for the Saints, they got nothing out of that drive. But who knows how that could have turned the ball game in favor of the Saints with momentum. And, oh, by the way, you had no Drew Brees in the lineup. So that was a game-changing light call. We just talked about the Minnesota play. I mean, I don't know exactly what they saw. I don't know what they thought they saw. But that was not worthy of overturning that touchdown. And we saw how that worked out in favor of the Green Bay Packers. And that personal foul, I mean, as a former defender, I guess they expect for guys that are moving as fast as they can to get to the quarterback and grab them and politely lay them down like they were laying down a 2-year-old in the crib. It's not going to happen.